Welcome to Manager Tools. Presenting in Zoom, part one. This cast answers these questions. Do you have tips on how to make a presentation over Zoom? How can I be most effective when presenting on a video call? Is there a checklist for Zoom presentations? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
For our clients whose organizations may be coming physically back to work within the next 60 to 90 days, please know that we're traveling and we're ready to work with you with any of our core client trainings. We're offering Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, and Effective Hiring Manager. Additionally, through hosting our public conferences, we found helpful ways to ensure social distancing and to promote a healthy environment so your 30 managers or professionals can learn together. Contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com to discuss how we can support your training needs.
So Mark, we're going to talk about Zoom today. I was looking over the show notes. And I tell you, this is it's largely a checklist. There's a lot here. I just got to think, I mean, how hard can Zoom be? I mean, you install the software, you invite a bunch of people, you start it up, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and actually there's a case to be made that it is that easy. And that's great. I mean, they made some good software. They figured out by testing and refining that with this set of settings, they would be able to provide a platform that most people could use fairly effortlessly. The same way most of us can use a conference room. We all kind of know how to do that. The problem becomes when you have to present, when you have to train. I will say, a friend of mine and I played golf yesterday. And he is a spine surgeon and went to Harvard Medical School. And he said, "Hey, when we're done, we were having dinner with our wives afterwards." And he made a comment. He says, "Hey, between the round and dinner, I have to be on. I have a thing, a call." I said, "Oh, what is it?" He says, "I'm on a Zoom call for my Harvard Med School's 35th class reunion." I said, "Oh, great. Well, I hope it's fun." He says, "Yeah, I don't know anything about Zoom, though." And I said, "Well, you know, it's not hard." And he said, "Yeah, I figure I'm just going to take it in my car." Like, okay, so you're not going to do the video? He says, "Oh, is it like FaceTime?" And, you know, we just got into this whole conversation where it was clear to me that because of his job, he doesn't use Zoom, doesn't need Zoom. And so he was completely clueless. And he says, "Oh, you mean I have to download an app?" I said, "Yeah, dude, you might want to go home to do this." And I think he did. So Zoom can work if you want to just be at the low end of being connected and having visual connection. But the problem is that once organizations have started to see Zoom as the tool while people are working from home, you get this situation where we're going to need presentations. We're going to need speeches. We're going to need training. And that is a level of complexity that you should not assume you can just get by walking into a Zoom call and doing whatever it is you do. You know, I tell people, when people walk into our conference rooms, when we're doing trainings at hotel rooms, at meeting rooms at hotels, they notice that the room is set up a certain way. It is, you know, everything is where it's supposed to be. The decks, the name tents, the markers, the agendas, the tables are arranged a certain way. The projector is already aligned. I'm amazed at trainings that I see where the presenter is still fiddling with whether the projector appropriately covers the projection screen at the start of the training. I told somebody once, "You know why that screen that you project on has black edges, don't you?" They said, "No, I thought it was just a border, a sewn border." I said, "No, it has black edges, so the white light of that screen can bleed over into the black edges, and the white light doesn't have to be perfectly square, perfectly straight, and perfectly aligned, but the screen will make it look aligned." And they didn't know that. And this is a guy who's been presenting for 10 years. And my point with all this is, if you're going to present, if you're going to train, the standard is completely different. You must show respect for your audience. if one person is going to get the undivided attention of 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 other people, that you have a very high bar to get over. You may think, no, I don't. I'm knowledgeable. Yes, you do. If I'm in your audience and I'm one of 50 and I detect any sense that you're not ready to deserve my time, I'm going to multitask in front of you. I say that not about me, but about a typical audience person. The audience members are keenly aware of your responsibility to have earned the right to have their attention. And they have, in many cases, a hair trigger. If it appears like you don't know what you're doing,
they're gone.
They're gone. And look, I hate to tell you guys, it's your fault. It's not their fault. It's fair. If they're in the audience, someone told them they had to be there. They weren't even sure about the content, but somebody has made a considered decision that that person could benefit. It's your opportunity to help them benefit. If they don't benefit, burden's on you, the presenter, the trainer. And we have been spending the last 3 months doing Zoom calls. Of course, we use Zoom well before for internal meetings and in some cases talking to clients, but we have spent hundreds of man hours in the last 3 months getting our Zoom settings, our steps, our details exactly right. So that if you come to a training or a presentation or a meeting that we're presenting or training or delivering in, you are going to see someone who is completely ready, who is not fiddling with their technology, who isn't asking, I don't know how to do this, or what do I do? What does anyone know what button do I push? Or, gosh, I'm sorry, guys, I'll have to step away. Or their phone is going off. Or you can tell they're constantly looking somewhere else on their computer screen. Or I've seen presenters who are speaking in a Zoom call, and because they get a chat during the Zoom call, they continue to speak to the audience while typing a chat answer. Now, some people think, wow, look at that. Wow, you know, that's impressive. I just think that's doing two things poorly. It's a lack of focus. It's a function of the chat feature in Zoom, which when you're presenting, we recommend you turn off. So this is detailed guidance on how to present or train on Zoom.
Yeah, and it's just not a normal presentation. There are enough differences between presenting in person and presenting over Zoom or a video conference. You got to pay attention to it.
Yeah, yeah. So look, we've got four bullets in the outline today. We're going to talk about what you do before attendees arrive, some of which you've probably heard from us before. But we literally extracted, Mike, our 7.5 page Zoom checklist for these show notes. And if you're a licensee, you not only get these show notes, you also get a copy of our checklist. So you don't have to create the rest of your checklist on your own. We didn't want to spend 3.5 hours going over the 7 pages. But we've got before attendees arrive, what you do 10 minutes before you start, 5 minutes before you start, when you bring attendees in from the waiting room, and then 2 minutes before you start. Now, again, we're not going to read you the entire 7-page checklist, but we are going to highlight tasks that we see in many cases people don't get right or don't understand why they should do it the way they do it. So the first rule of delivering training or presenting, even if you're an external agent, is for you to host the meeting yourself. In Zoom, being the host gives you options and abilities to troubleshoot problems that you won't have if you aren't the host. Like, for instance, for us at Manager Tools, if a client won't allow us to be the host, we always have a Manager Tools staff, someone from our staff, as an assistant to help our presenter on the call, and we get them an invite from the host to deal with issues that may arise. Now, if I were a host and my presenter said, I was a client, and my presenter said, it will improve the quality of the work, and it will make things simpler for us in terms of preparing if you will allow me to host. And the client said, no, I have to host. I'd roll my eyes and say, you know, well, I'm sorry. If I were the client, I would say, sure, if you want to do it, go ahead. That's fine with me. It's one less thing for my admin person to do. Of course, we'd have to assume that you were good at what you did. If you can't be the host, and if you can't get an assistant, someone to help you, and if you then couldn't get someone whom you know in the audience to act as an assistant, when you say their name and say, Bob, I need some help, will you please go do X? Any glitch that could happen in a Zoom call, and they happen, can derail an entire session. And I've had it happen. I'm an hour into a two-hour session and, you know, the phone line goes out or somebody's, you know, the computer dies or there's a systemic glitch and you lose the entire group. I'm telling you, folks, the chances you get that entire group back are nearly zero. But think about, compare that to a normal meeting room. You don't lose people. I mean, we've had, Mike, were you, yeah, you were with me the time that there was an earthquake in,
yes, I was,
in Virginia, and we were in New Jersey, and we all had to leave the hotel, and then an hour later, and actually, I was starting to present outside near the parking lot when, because our agendas are so tight, when they called us, allowed us to go back in.
Yeah, people didn't have time to panic, because we were still presenting.
You and I actually have been in two earthquakes together. We were in L.A., at an airport hotel, as I recall. And we're standing there, and all of a sudden there's an earthquake. And you looked at me like, oh, my God, what is this? I said, dude, it's an earthquake. That's many years ago. But, you know, it happens. The lights go out. The power goes out. The air conditioning goes out. People don't just disappear from the room as if they've been disapparated or something, a la Harry Potter. You know, they have not been beamed back aboard the Enterprise. They're still in the room. It's just dark. and they're physically constrained in a way that keeps them from doing perhaps anything else.
And you can communicate with them on what to do. But if they disappear off a conference call, a video call, good luck.
Yeah. So again, any glitch can derail a session. And it's good to have, if you're the host, it gives you many more options. Okay, the next thing you want to do is when you invite people, since you're the host, you're going to be doing the inviting, attach your presentation slides, if you have any, to your invite, okay? You always want to give your audience as much information as you can in advance of a session. Now, a lot of people say, well, a bunch of people aren't going to print them out. No, we understand that. We're focusing on the people who are going to be most well prepared for the session and are therefore going to get the most out of it anyway. Try to avoid thinking of the lowest common denominator every time you're in a group. Well, we can't do that. You know, Jolynn won't like it. Well, nobody likes Jolynn. Why are we doing things the way Jolynn wants it? My best guy over here, Roberta, is so good. I want to do it because I know Roberta will be disappointed. She won't have something to take notes on. Oh, well, she can take notes in her notebook. Yeah, but then they'll look like every other meeting note she has. Whereas if she gets a deck, every time she looks at that deck, she'll know those are her notes. She'll know it immediately. Yeah, so give everybody a copy of your slides when you invite them. Look, something else. Make yourself look like a presenter, for heaven's sakes. Dress up a bit. Show respect for your audience. This is becoming less and less of a thing, which means for those of you who are interested in your careers and getting ahead, whether you want to get promoted or not, if you want respect from your organization for the quality of your work, it's actually getting easier to do it because everyone else is sort of slouching toward Gomorrah. They, oh, well, I can present in shorts or, you know, I don't really need to sit up. And I can present in a Zoom call while swinging my chair back and forth and holding a pen in front of my face and so on. I'm sorry, you look like a fool when you do that. And it's disrespectful. So dress up a bit. Show people that you consider this a privilege to talk to them. One person talking to many is always a privilege in the world, and show that you respect the moment and them. It's not about you. It's about them. That's the final rule of all presentations. It's not about you. It's not about the material. It's about the audience. You'll also want to print out the list of attendees as a roster. Okay. You'll also then want to check the pronunciation of every name. I always stumble, for instance, on the Irish name Owen, which is spelled E-O-I-N. And I always think it's like Eowyn. But when I talk to Brits, when I talk to Scots, when I talk to Irish, they all say, no, it's Owen. Now, if you get a native Irish speaker, there may be a little bit of that. But then when I say Sheshe, for instance, in Chinese, people laugh. The Chinese laugh at me and say, no, that's you're not saying it with the right inflection, because I don't speak Chinese. So you have to practice it. And if you don't know, when you're in doubt of someone's name, during introductions, ask them. When they come in, when people are streaming in from the waiting area, ask them. Hey, look, we're gonna introduce ourselves to one another. Hey, can you tell me how to pronounce your name?
Yeah, and people actually care. Believe it or not, folks, they do care.
Post the attendee roster near your camera. And by the way, that probably means if you're doing normal distance stuff with your camera, you're going to have to print it out bigger than 12-point type. I actually have it taped to the window right behind my webcam on my iMac, and I print it out really big. So if I'm looking at the camera, I can actually see the attendee list. I can either flick my eyes to it or not, and I can still see it, much like I've told people many times that no matter where you are in my office, no matter where you sit, as long as I'm sitting at my desk, there's a clock over your shoulder, and it's an analog clock, and I can tell what time it is while still looking at your face. I don't have to look at my watch. And same thing here. I have a clock right next to my webcam camera, and you'll want the roster names close to the camera so you don't have to go searching through the gallery view of your attendees to find a specific name. And if it's a big group, the names will be printed so small, many of you won't be able to read them, or you'll look pretty funny presenting with your eyes scanning back and forth across your computer. And if you think you're at your very best when your eyes are scanning back and forth across your computer, looking for an individual name and still talking about something else, you're sadly mistaken. Nobody's that good. Okay. Print your agenda. If there's an agenda, if you have 3 or 4 or 5 points and you have some time hacks in there, and post it again where you can see it. And then again, you'll note you should have it near a clock. Years ago, I used to in training rooms, if I were going somewhere, and if the training room at the client did not have a clock, I would go to Walmart and buy a clock, a cheap clock with a AA battery, and I would hang it on the wall. Sometimes I'd have to tape it on the wall. And in addition, I would always insist on starting at the top of the hour, and I had colored electrician's tape at certain points on the clock outside of, say, 25 after or 45 or whatever, to remind me of when key agenda breaks were. I'm doing everything in my power to send me messages about my clock, my audience, my agenda, so on. And it's all around the camera as much as possible. You shouldn't be leaving your attendee list on your desk, presenting from your laptop. And then when somebody asks a question, start rifling through papers on your desk. You can't do that, guy. Well, you can do it. It just comes across as unprofessional and unprepared. Speaking of cameras, I read 30 articles about this, and I've had people send me a raft of them as well. The one thing you got to know about a Zoom call, or for that matter, almost any video call, is your camera that you use, it must be above the level of your eyes. And by above, I mean compared to the ground. If you're using a laptop, you're in danger of looking really silly. And I wouldn't want you to present to me if you had your laptop sitting on the desk and you sitting. You don't have to stand up when you present to a Zoom audience. You can sit down. But if you're sitting down and you're looking down and your laptop is opened to, say, 120 degrees so the camera looks up at you, you look like you're trying to dominate the group, and I'm looking right up your nose. And you're now looking down your nose at me. It's not done by people who are prepared and people who are professionals. Next, clean up your office, okay? The view behind you is part of respecting your audience. Don't assume, by the way, that you can use any software package on your computer which uses the camera in order to check what shows up behind you or around you. Different software programs that use the camera and will show you an image of yourself use different aspect ratios and different qualities for your video frame. It's happened to me. I realized when I prepared, I used Photo Booth on the Mac, and it had a different aspect ratio than Zoom did. And when I started the Zoom call, I realized in the very far back corner of my office, which is set up to be good for Zoom calls, there was a briefcase of mine that was not, one of my historical briefcases was not on the shelf, and I had to go put it back. It's a small thing, but people appreciate small things if you do small things for them. I mean, gosh, you know, I told somebody this the other day and they said, oh, I didn't think about that. Why do you think the phrase, it's the thought that counts, matters when it comes to gifts? You don't have to give somebody something ostentatious. You can give them something small, something simple, something, frankly, inexpensive. It's the thought that counts. And by the way, it's the thought that counts is not a cynical expression. You can certainly make it cynical. But what we're talking about here is you're telling the audience, I've thought this through. I know what you're going to see. And I've taken the time to show enough respect from you to make it look like I am clean, neat, tidy, and professional. The phrase, oh, it's a mess, but I know where everything is. It just makes you look like you're attempting to cover up for your own inability to be marginally professional. Okay. Sorry, I got off on a ran on that one. Look, the next thing you got to do, I've talked about this before, I'm amazed, and it seems the more technical you get, the harder it is for people to get this one. Clean up the desktop on your computer, okay? Again, not your desk, the physical desk, but your screen, okay? It's fine to have a custom image on there. In fact, I presented to some Apple Care managers the other day, and I chose the wrong view for my presenter view. And the view I chose was of my entire desktop, which it didn't have anything on it other than a picture taken of our golf course in the Pacific Ocean, just about 100 meters from my house. But Wendy said, it's lovely, but it's the wrong picture. And I'd forgotten to choose the PowerPoint slides. But there was nothing untoward on there. But more importantly, there weren't 50 or 75 file folders. There were no programs running in my Mac's dock. The moment people see your dock or your whatever programs are running, people get curious as to what you're running and why. Look, what is all that? Why does his desktop look different than mine? Okay, so no files, no folders, no programs running, nothing. Trust us, people will notice. Next, turn on your Zoom lighting. And if you don't know it, we don't need to spend a half an hour going through it. We have other guidance about that, but there are lights you can get. I don't think you need to get the lights. We do because we present professionally, but there are easy enough guidelines for how to light yourself, how to be lighted, having background lighting, and in some cases colors to wear, not wearing striped shirts because of the moire pattern and so on. But more importantly, you don't have to go out and buy expensive circular lights if you don't want to. You may need to make some small adjustments where lighting is, so you neither look too washed out or too dark.
Yeah, at least pay attention to it. Don't present in front of an open window such that you look like all people see is a silhouette, right? They can't even see your facial expressions. That'd be bad.
Next, use a headset, okay? Wireless earphones, earbuds, do not cut it for presentations. Now look, they're fine for a conversation with a friend, but they do not make it for conversations. We don't care if they're convenient. They sound terrible relative to what you could have with a headset with a boom microphone. Yes, you can wear a wired headphone, okay, like the original iPhone headphones that were wired and plugged into the phone and so on. The problem with that is the wires. So what we use at Mandator Tools when I present and when I'm on every call all the time is a Jabra Pro 9450 wireless headset with a boom mic. No one's ever said I look dorky. Maybe they think so. But we have recordings of our sessions, and our sound quality is outstanding, and almost no one else's is. People seem to think that they don't want a headset on, or they just want to use Apple AirPods, which are fantastic product. I love mine, but they're not good for Zoom calls. I think it has to do with compression. Somebody explained it to me, but we don't need to get all technical here. Next, mute your devices. Guys, I mean, I don't know why people don't remember to do that.
Because they don't have a checklist.
Yeah, that's right. Good. And in my case, it's always muted, so I don't have to worry about it. For some of you, and I say mute, what I mean is eliminate the distraction. So for some of you, that means putting your phone away. A muted phone that buzzes every 10 seconds on your desktop is going to distract you. More importantly, I know you think it won't, but believe me, it does.
Oh, absolutely. The audience. I mean, it'll distract
the audience.
They can hear it, especially if it's on your hardwood desk resonating.
That's stupid. Okay, next. You may want to consider having a separate from Zoom internal communication channel if you have an assistant or a helper in the audience. How would someone be able to communicate with you if your headset goes down? What if Zoom crashes? We happen to use Slack at Mandator Tools, but in one instance, Wendy and I had a Google Doc, a live Google Doc set up, and on my secondary desktop on my computer, I had a browser window open only to that document. I had a single tab open, and the default type size was 36 point. So, on my 27-inch iMac sitting in front of me, I'm sitting right now recording, but I'm also looking into where the webcam is. And to my right, approximately, let's say, a foot to the right of the camera is the top left corner of my other monitor. And there's a Word document, which is probably 10 inches long, measured not on the screen, but by a ruler. And when she started typing, I can see her typing, and I can actually intuit what she's typing without looking over there. And that helped me to discover that a couple people had just come in that we had been expecting, and I was able to welcome them. But if you have 30 people in a room or 50 people in a room, two people leaving or two people coming, you don't know. But again, that's only if you need an alternate channel. I do think that some people think, oh, you can just message me in Slack or you can just message me in Zoom, but it's not that easy. You have to go check the chat, and we're frankly going to recommend you turn chat off. Okay. Next. Zoom, by the way, right now is not open, not running in this checklist. Okay. We're going to come to that, but not yet. All we're doing is preparing you for the session. You. The first sort of important technological piece is starting PowerPoint or whatever software you use to present slides. You could use Keynote, certainly. You want to do this before you launch Zoom. Once you've launched it and you have your slide presentation that you're going to present from up, if you're going to have one, in the top menu, click Slideshow, choose Setup Show from the drop-down menu. 99% of you have never done this before in PowerPoint. Choose Setup Show from the drop-down menu, okay, from Slideshow. Then choose Browsed by Individual in the dialog box that shows up. Leave everything else in that dialog box the same and click OK. And then and only then put PowerPoint into Slideshow mode where there's no thumbnails on the left, where there's no notes on the bottom. It just shows that slide. You'll come back to that, believe me, in a few minutes. The next thing you want to do is test your remote control for slide control if you're using one. And we at Manager Tools use one to avoid having the mouse cursor show up every time you have to advance your slides. Now, you could also use the keyboard, the arrows on your keyboard. That works fine too. But in our way, if you have a clicker, a remote, you can be making all the normal gestures with your hand and you don't have to stop to remove one hand to put it below your desktop or on your desktop to surreptitiously forward the slides. It shows, believe me, people notice. They notice and they email me about it. Mark, I notice you appear to be advancing your slides with your keyboard. Did you know that there are remotes that work with Macintoshes? Yes, I did. Believe me, I have 50 of them. I have the entire history of Macintosh remotes in a drawer somewhere here over the years. The first ones, I think, were silver. And actually, for a long time, Apple didn't make them. Okay, so that's all the things. It's not all, but it's the highlights of our checklist. Again, licensees can get the full checklist, which is too long to spend. It'll take 5 casts to do. That we're going to say before you begin. We want to end this cast with a shout out to a long-term licensee. We've been doing this for quite a while. It seems interesting to be doing it during the time of COVID. We can't say enough about what our long-term licensees mean to us. They're part of the community. And so we'd like to thank this week, Teresa Beckner, who's been with us for 14 years. Been listening during all that time, was with us from the very beginning. As I recall, she asked me some questions over email that many years ago. And I suspect me and her and Mike and many others are surprised that we're still going strong. And it's not because of us, it's because of the community. So Teresa, thank you for your long-term licensee status.
All right, folks, we're at about our time limit, so we're going to finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.